Hi everyone, welcome to STEP's audio channel. We are very excited to share our content from STEP's events to learn all about the latest trends in startups, digital media, fintech, future tech, and wellness in emerging markets. You can find us on Enerami, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Make sure to subscribe to your favorite channel, and we hope you enjoy the content.
Before we start, why don't we take 30 seconds each for you to do a quick elevator pitch. Pretend, I don't know, Mark Cuban or Sequoia Capital is here and they have a big checkbook that they want to write. Tell us about yourselves in 30 seconds, and why don't we start with you, owner?
Okay, pleased to be here. I'm co-founder of Carbon Sifter. We enable businesses measure, reduce, and remove their carbon footprint. Previously, I was with Talabat, leading the regional strategy function, and back then with Boston Consulting Group. So I'm here around for 15 years in Dubai and Riyadh.
Perfect. Thank you, owner. Alexander, you're up.
Hey, everyone. My name is Alexander. I'm co-founder and CEO of Curious. I've been in UAE for almost 10 years now. What Curious essentially does is to help employers to reduce their time to hire from about 40 days to close to 10, 11 days. And we do that using custom or tuned large language models trained with our data. And we are essentially helping employers to get deeper insights into talent throughout the whole recruitment process and to automate the recruitment process, very much focusing on the MENA region with laser focus on UAE and Saudi.
Perfect. Thanks, Alexander. Connor.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thanks for having me, guys. I'm Connor. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Avant-Garde Middle East. We are a digital-first crypto asset management firm. So basically, we launch crypto funds that are built on blockchain technology. And we're all about kind of revolutionizing how asset management functions using like smart contracts and actual blockchain tech to make it much more streamlined, efficient, more transparent, and cheaper.
So yeah. Perfect. Thanks for the intros, gentlemen. So on this stage, just to set the room a little bit, we've got AI, we've got Web3, and we've got climate tech. Do you consider yourself climate
correct,
tech?
Correct, yeah.
So those are the three hottest categories right now, pretty much anywhere. Let's talk about your experiences, because all three of your companies are doing well. You've put down roots here. You could have chosen anywhere to launch your companies. I mean, when you think of AI, the first place you think of isn't always the UAE. So why don't we start with you, Alexander? What pulled you to launch your startup here in the UAE, and specifically Abu Dhabi?
So first and foremost, we were already based out of here, but I'm from Sweden. So coming from Europe, and I've spent most of my career between Sweden and Netherlands, there's a huge difference in terms of this region to build out of this region. And if you think about the markets very globally, there's not a single country in this region that is big enough for a startup to rely on in terms of market share. That's not the case in the West. So if you build in this region, you're obviously building within a test bed that most likely you'll be able to scale out of the region as well. So for us, it was very clearly the right region for us to build out of. There's so many different nuances to this region, and Curious is within recruitment and HR tech. And these nuances that exist here does not exist anywhere else. So if we can solve the problems for the region, we'll definitely build a solution that helps millions and that can expand across the region. But it's also building a very higher sort of competitive advantage and a higher moat for us as we're localizing for the region. So for us, it was that was a very clear decision that we need to build within the region. And then scaling out of the region is a secondary phase for us at that point in time.
Thank you, Connor. When you talk about where you want to build in your world, which is Web3, one of the first things that you'd have to look at is the regulatory environment. It's a hot button issue around the world when it comes to Web3. Tell us a little bit about the regulatory environment here.
Yeah, no, 100%. So like, look, we are headquartered in London. So FCA is regulatory body in the UK. I grew up in the US where we have the SEC. And I think both of those players are quite... they're stifling innovation when it comes to Web3. So for us, being in an environment like ADGM was super attractive because they are such a forward-thinking regulator. And, you know, we want regulation that is both sensible and protects participants, but also allows for innovation.
So give me an example of that.
So I think, for example, like in November of last year, ADGM released its DLT Foundations framework, which is the world's first framework for DAOs and foundations that can have an actual legal status. So a DAO is like a decentralized autonomous organization, and they operate in quite a legal gray area where they can't open bank accounts and do things that normal businesses can. So with this framework, they now have the license to actually open a company and do things that, you know, previously were prohibitive. So that's a pretty good example, I think, yeah.
How, on a scale of 1 to 10, how further ahead is the regulatory environment here compared to Europe or North America?
Look, I think they all have different pros and cons. I mean, in the US, we've seen the launch of Bitcoin ETFs, which is a big step in the right direction. But I think here, it's just a different vibe, right? Like, they're much more open to having dialogues and conversations and really inviting us in to actually participate in the legislation that they create. And I think that helps pave the way for a more, conducive future to actually allowing innovation.
Thanks, Connor. Onur, I want to shift to you for a second, and I just want to put you on the spot a little bit. For those that don't know, Onur and I are in the same cohort at Hub71, both hustling to do what we're doing. And he was one of the first people I met, actually, when I got into Hub71. I don't know if it's because I liked his beard, but we just kind of connected. And he explained what he did, and I said, okay, pretending I knew what he did, and I really didn't know very much. And then I kid you not, it felt like every couple of weeks I was seeing an announcement that Carbon Cipher was making. And the speed at which he was executing was phenomenal. I mean, I'm still jealous to this day, but you've done really well when it comes to partnerships in the region. Walk me through the process for how you approach partnering with organizations here to sell what you've built.
Yeah, and thank you. I felt the same. I'm not going to hide. I love how Hub71 welcomed startups like us and helped us to build a community. Because I think this is where you start getting benefits and start learning from others. In terms of partnerships, at least from our perspective, climate change is a global problem, but we are a big believer of local solutions. And the more you localize, the more partners you need. Because when the target is too big and the goal is big, it could be daunting. And it's too big to be handled by a single government, single institution, single way of approaching a problem. So what we did is, look, there's a climate problem. How can we bring it into day-to-day lives of people, mid-corps and SMEs, who have been left out of this discussion and not given the opportunity to even participate? So what we did is, okay, who are the enablers in the ecosystem? That's why we partnered with Emirates Nature, WWF, because they help us a lot on reaching local projects. MasterCard, that helps a lot on reaching SMEs so that we can help them with their climate action.
What's the responsiveness been in this region when you go to potential partners like this?
So it depends. I think the first thing is curiosity. So everyone wants to do something. That's a fact. But no one knows where to start. People have ideas more than many think. No one knows where to start. And when you go to them with a very tangible POC, hey, look, in the next 3 months, we can do this together. Here is the impact. And they bite it.
I need to take notes and learn how you're doing that, because I think all of us in varying degrees are trying to reach out to grow our companies. Let's talk about the tech ecosystem. And let me just throw this out to whoever wants to answer this question. The tech ecosystem in Abu Dhabi specifically has been called growing, emerging, seed stage, kind of like sort of at the early part of where they want to be maybe 5 years from now or 10 years from now. Let's start with you, Alex, because you've been in the region for 10 years. How have you seen the region change, and where do you think the tech ecosystem is right now at this moment?
So, when I say tech, I'm going to generalize, but then I'm going to start honing in a little bit on the AI side of things. Sure. As well. So there's certainly been a massive acceleration, especially in the last, I'd say, from my point of view, about 3-4 years, in terms of focus on tech, focus on AI specifically, but more so from a government point of view. Because once it comes top down or government support comes in, things start to accelerate as well within the private sector. And so that has been a very evident pattern that we've seen. And if you look specifically at Abu Dhabi, for example, they've really positioned themselves as an innovation hub for AI and certain other sort of advanced technologies. We have multiple examples, for example, the Falcon LLM out of Abu Dhabi, which is, you know, a global LLM available for us here to build up on top of. TII as a research institution and many other examples as well. Hub 71 being an accelerator that kind of not only helps you to get integrated and incubated into the marketplace, but also helps you to get ingested and infused into a community. It's another example. And the governments that are investing in funds, startups as well. So that, all of that is an accelerating factor for driving innovations. And AI in itself will have, you know, a massive impact in terms of efficiency and driving use cases and innovation. But it's not enough with just AI. And I think there's a prediction that AI will contribute about $100 billion in the next 5 to 10 years to the UAE GDP. But AI in itself is not enough. From a consumer point of view, it's great. We can use it for many different things to automate and improve our lives. But when it comes to businesses, where the actual unlock of the innovation is going to happen is on the data side. So the next step that businesses needs to really do is to adopt AI, whatever type of model, and get ready for the machine learning aspect of things. This means that you need to have large data sets that you need to train your your models with to be able to identify patterns that are not possible for humans, for example, to identify. And this is where I think what we're going to see an acceleration within is on the data side and machine learning side of things. Now that we have the foundation, we have the models available to us, and we can really innovate on top of it.
Connor, let's talk about digital assets and Hub 71. For those of you that don't know, we're all attached in one way or the other to the Hub 71 program. There's probably an official way to refer to it. It's an accelerator, incubator, friend, somebody that's just gonna help you understand how to live in Abu Dhabi. It's everything from, here, we'll make it easier for you to incorporate and set up, to, hey, do you need restaurant reservations? We can recommend some good ones. Like, it's really a growing community that way. Connor, the digital assets program at Hub 71 is a little bit unique because it's focused programming for the world of Web3. Can you just talk us through that process and how it helped you?
Yeah, no, 100%. Well, like you said, I'd actually never even been to the UAE before I moved here. So like the Hub 71 team helped us with everything from visas, getting the company incorporated, everything set up, restaurant reservations, like you mentioned. And in terms of the actual digital asset program itself, so they bring in experts on like a kind of weekly, bi-weekly basis. And we have different conversations about, you know, how you set up a DAO, various legal considerations, tokenization, all these different topics. And we also get to like network and brainstorm with other startups in the program as well. And I know for ourselves, like we've been able to drive different business cases because we're connecting with these other startups. And I think just being in that kind of hotbed ecosystem where you're trading ideas and learning new things on an ongoing weekly basis is pretty awesome. And then of course it culminates with an investor day. So we actually get to sit down with, you know, up to 10 different VCs and actually pitch our business and try and, you know, grow the company that way. So I think, yeah, from start to finish, it was great. And as I said, like from having never even been to the UAE before, they did a great job in getting me set up. So definitely appreciate it.
Okay, so I got to ask a follow-up question to that. For anybody that might be watching at home or this might be recorded and you're live streaming it, what's the one thing about Abu Dhabi that surprised you the most?
The sand. No, I'm kidding. honestly, I was surprised by how like international and forward thinking it is. You know, as I mentioned earlier, there's definitely like a culture and a sense of wanting to do things in a way that's fast and efficient and different than, you know, a place like London or New York, where it's very entrenched in certain histories and ideas. I think here you're open to experiment and innovate, but within a safe regulatory framework that still keeps people safe, essentially. So yeah, that's what I'd say.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Just speaking about coming to Abu Dhabi, my first trip to Abu Dhabi was in 2003. And this was before Ream Island was built. There was no Saadiyat. There was just like Sheikh Zayed Road. I think Marina Mall had maybe just opened. And I remember coming to Dubai at that point, and I did it in reverse. Most people come to Dubai and they do a day trip to Abu Dhabi. I actually spent my time in Abu Dhabi and did a day trip to Dubai. And in those days, you could walk across Sheikh Zayed Road. It wasn't this massive highway. It was like you got dropped off on one side and you go, cab driver says, yeah, just go to the other side. Some people describe the tech ecosystem here as a startup itself. Because if you look at the speed at which the country and Abu Dhabi and Dubai have grown, it's been astronomical in the last 30 or 40 years. And I think as startup founders ourselves, we look at that and we say, well, maybe there's something baked into the fiber of how these places exist that want to move fast. Let's shift gears a little bit, Onur, and talk about where things might not move fast. You're doing something that has a massive effect on the rest of the world, that could be a massive solution when it comes to climate change. If you could have one wish when it comes to growing your startup through Hub 71 or through Abu Dhabi, what would you do to make it easier for you?
Yeah, I think there are a few things, but I'll try to group them. I think in my view, there are really three things. I think one is diversification of the funding, which is aligned with the interests of the stakeholders, meaning I think more government agencies could play a role in financing long-term projects within climate space, because short-term mandated VC funds may not help you align your stars. I think this is one, diversification of funding. I think the second thing is feedback loop within policymaking, back with data. So I think startups have can contribute a lot on policymaking. In a typical day, we get more than thousands of data points on consumer behavior when it comes to climate. And last but not least, I would say building local know-how, like what climate means for UAE, what's the impact on UAE, how my supplier is going to cope with it. Because the solutions of global north today, and if you just look around, may not necessarily be applicable to global south. So I think this is the shift I think policymaking and investors have in mind. How can we localize our solutions to handle the problem, the climate problem of the global south? This is how I see it.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. That's a great answer. Alex, let's talk about AI for a second. There is no ecosystem in the world that isn't applying, researching, developing, and trying to grow AI. That's just the reality of the time we live in. What are some of the most promising applications of AI that you've seen for this region? Outside of curios, of course.
So let's look at it from a government point of view first. I think the government already kind of has set its strategy and priority in terms of sectors, not necessarily a particular use case or use case or solution, and they focus on the major industries that really fuels the economy here, because if they're going to contribute to the GDP, that they need to focus on the foundational layer. So we're talking about healthcare, we're talking about logistics and transportation, we're talking about cybersecurity, these sectors are large enough for AI to be adopted and to build various different type of use cases within them. And if I take an example of Curious, for us, it doesn't really matter whether we serve companies within healthcare or hospitality, because we can really drive that value to any of them. So that is the first sort of priority that is set already on the UAE agenda. But this doesn't mean that there won't be other use cases that either private sector or startups, tech companies will come into the market. There's going to be loads of opportunities once you, see the foundation of the AI within healthcare or within hospitality. There's going to be other use cases that's going to be enabled because of that efficiency that has been sort of adopted. So this is more from a government kind of high level. One particular example that I can give you is within gaming, and gaming has always been, you know, something that probably has not been on the government agenda per se, but it's a huge industry if you think about it, and it's even growing in this region. And this is just one example of innovation that that I've seen. And one part of gaming is that it's typically funded by ads. And I don't know if you guys have played any games, but typically these ads disturbs the game in the middle of the action. So I've seen a couple of ideas and that have coming out of this region specifically, where instead of having ads popping up in front of you and disturbing the games, they're built within the game directly. So imagine playing a game and you're on top of a building and you start seeing Pepsi on a billboard within the game. And these are ideas that are coming out of this region that are essentially going to be built out of the region and for the world, for the big game developers. And this is just one, you know, very minor sort of idea that I've seen that this is could actually be groundbreaking. And the fact that it was harvested in UAE and in our region.
You know, it reminds me of a famous television show that's now syndicated across the world, American Idol. And they have different versions in different countries. They had like Arab Idol and Australian Idol and all of that. And the first season, the judges were just sitting there like how we're sitting here. And then the second season, they all had Coca-Cola cups on their desks. And what they did was they took the ads outside of the commercial and they put the ad into the programming itself, right? And I'm sure Coca-Cola paid a lot of money for that. Connor, if I gave you a crystal ball and I asked you to predict what the Web3 community would look like, things move fast. So I won't even say 5 years. I'll say 2 years from now. What's your prediction?
Yeah, that's a tough question to answer. But look, I can focus on some themes and some challenges that I think need to be solved. So first of all is like user experience and particularly decentralized finance and Web3 in general. If you're not a crypto native and you jump into this space, suddenly you have to deal with MetaMask, multisig, different wallets, signing off on transactions. And it's not the easiest thing to wrap your head around. And also the consequences of getting it wrong are quite serious. Like if you're investing money and you somehow send it to the wrong wallet address, that money is theoretically not retrievable, right? So I think as an industry, we need to focus on making the user experience a little bit more seamless. I also think from like a business point of view, we need to do a better job of building infrastructure that connects Web3 native businesses with more traditional companies. So we have a lot of data and information that lives on the blockchain, but we need to kind of extract that and make sure that traditional businesses can actually plug in and kind of work side by side to drive progress forward. And I think a lot of times in the crypto industry, we kind of build a little bit in silo. And so I think we need to open that up a bit more to see the industry really flourish. But look, I think as a general sort of macro statement, in my prediction, markets will continue to go up. More people will get involved. And like on the talent side of things, when you see the amount of people leaving from Goldman Sachs and large traditional finance players and coming into the crypto space. And as we see more regulation get passed, I think we're on track for hopefully a good couple of years. So, yeah.
I like the answer. It was like a very politician type answer, right? But that was really good. There are going to be some people in the audience right now or watching at home or watching on social media later who were thinking about Hub 71, or maybe by extension, thinking about Abu Dhabi. Maybe somebody like you, Connor, how did you find out about Hub 71, by the way?
My co-founder actually applied, and then we did some more research, and it was kind of a no-brainer for us. So,
So was it one of those things where he's like, hey, let's go to Abu Dhabi?
Well, she applied. She went through the application process. I sort of joined in, and she was like, look, are you open to moving to the Middle East? And I said, yeah, of course. So we made it happen.
So I think there are going to be people who are in your shoes, or perhaps Alex, your shoes, maybe they're in Dubai, maybe they're somewhere else, and they're trying to figure out how to grow this idea, this startup, and they're trying to figure out the right thing. You've all done it, owner, you've done it. All of you have varying degrees of success. What would you tell somebody who's looking at Abu Dhabi as a place to grow their startup? and be really honest.
I mean, I actually did a little bit of research because I was curious myself about the Hub 71 ecosystem. So since its launch, Hub 71 startups have raised more than $1.2 billion from VCs. So that's obviously quite attractive. And they've generated more than $800 million in revenue as well. So like from our side, we look at the data, we look at the stats, the ecosystem, the regulation, the fact that we can network. And obviously as well, I haven't even touched on this, but from like a sales perspective, if we're trying to raise capital, what better place to do it than Abu Dhabi? So I think it depends on your business and the industry that you're in. But for us, like I said, it was definitely a no-brainer.
Yeah, so I think in any program, Hub 71 on any accelerator or incubators, it starts with what you put in is what you get out. You have to be going in with that mindset. And the other aspect, especially for us, what was really kind of unique for Hub 71 was two things. One was that they truly built the community around not only the program, but even after the program, you're part of the community and you can also access a lot of experts, peers, and even investors. You have access to a whole community. But the most impressive part was the post-program value creation, which for us worked really well. We get invited to different events. We get connected with different experts. For us, it's very important, especially on the Abu Dhabi angle with Falcon LLM. We even get sort of introductions to corporates, especially for Curious, to drive those partnerships. And resulted in multiple partnerships, which was a result not the program per se, but the after effect of the program. And I can't say that every single program has the after effect yet.
Yeah, amazing. Owner.
Yeah, I think most of it has been said. I fully agree with the community approach because end of the day, again, similar to the partnership topic, you learn a lot from the journeys of the other co-founders. And if they just put you in front of a screen and with a menu to go through it and lecture you and you sit as a co-founder, independent co-founders who are not connected to each other, the value is very minimal. And so what Hub does is they flip it. But they put actually the co-founders at the stage and they help you a lot all the way from social activities, from learning point of view. They make you almost, they push you to become friends. And then the rest follows. I think this is number one. Number two, let's be very realistic. I really like what Alex mentioned. They put the skin in the game, right? They invest in you, like also in terms of, I would say, not only time and the network, but in terms of cash, they invest. And then they make everything super easy through digital application platforms. Like you go, you pick your vendors, everything is sorted out, super transparent. You get your incentive package almost in a minute. Number three is, I would say, the huge, well-backed branding it has. So hardly any fundraising activity or business development activity I ever had, hardly anyone said, oh, like what's Hub 71? Like everyone knows Hub 71. Everyone knows it. They have a very diligent process to pick startups, and it gives you a very good early start in your discussions.
Yeah, let me add one thing that I think we've all experienced to varying degrees. If you have already raised money or you've been speaking to investors and you've been speaking to large funds, something interesting happened in North America and Europe a couple of years ago where they basically stopped writing checks. And so there was a lot of tribulation when it came to these larger funds. And when you would speak to these larger funds, I had this experience where I would go to some of my investors and I'd say, hey, I'm passing through London. Do you have time for lunch on this day or that day or New York? And they would say, sorry, I'm actually traveling. And I'd say, okay, so where are you going? And they'd say, actually, I'm going to the Middle East. And they'd say, I'm going to the UAE. And this was because when money stopped being deployed in North America, it was still flowing freely here. And the investors that invested in me were coming here to top up their funds. And that actually had made that really made me think. And that made Hub 71 a really big opportunity for me because I was like, well, if the rest of the world is coming here to raise money, why don't I cut them out and raise money here directly for my own startup? And I think to a large degree that's people are still writing checks here, especially as you get to like, you know, Series A, Series B, there's a lot of capital in this region. But going back to what you talked about, Owner, I think the most overlooked aspect, and I say this having just come out of Hub71, is the community aspect. Building, for those of you that know, like, you'll feel this in your heart when I say it. Building a startup is the loneliest thing in the world. It's incredibly hard. You're doing something that 99% of other people don't have the courage to do, or the capital or the support. And many of us don't or didn't start with the capital or the courage or the support. We were just crazy enough to do it anyway. And at every stage of your startup, your highs are intense and your lows are really intense. I joke that your best day and your worst day are just 15 minutes apart. And everybody here on the stage has felt that experience where you've signed a deal and something happens and everything that you've planned just kind of collapses. You can't do it alone. It's the truth. And even if you have co-founders, sometimes you need time away from those co-founders too. And Hub71 is like, to use an American term, it's like Alcoholics Anonymous, right? It's like, it's a group that you can go, everybody's anonymous. You can say whatever you want to say, and you wind up becoming like really good friends. I don't know if this happened in your cohorts, but like, I'm not even sure how it happened, but I'm hanging out with some of these guys. Like, we play paddleball now. And like, North Americans don't play paddleball. It's not a thing for us, right? But I fell in love with the game, and now I'm texting guys, let's go play paddle tonight. Let's go play paddle. And I think that's sort of one of the comforting things about Hub71 is you're not doing it alone. You're doing it with people who are going through the same struggles, trying to raise capital, trying to hire, trying to solve all the similar problems. And it's like a massive, if you go on a website and they don't have active live support, it's like a database of help, right? What's your help question? And you put it in. Hub71 is like literally like hundreds of people walking around that can help you with those things. We've only got about 2 minutes left, so I want to keep this very, very fast. Owner, where do you see yourself 5 years from now? Where do you see Carbon Cipher?
Where do I see it? I see a very tangible impact happening, seeing what we have achieved in the last 3 months. If I can just see the 5 years ahead, I see every individual taking their very first climate action, tangible action, and thousands of untouched SMEs doing meaningful stuff that has a positive impact on their P&L and moving the needle, like getting very close to the targets UAE government set.
I love it. I love how you led with impact and not, I want to be making X number of millions of dollars, but I think you will. Alex, where do you want to be in 5 years?
So Curious essentially is going to be a platform in the next 3 to 5 years that on one side is going to help employers to get deep insights in any candidates, wherever they are coming from, in real time. And then if I flip it on the other side, on the candidate side, candidates will be supported throughout their careers to be able to plan according to what their preferences are and get connected with the marketplace and the mentors and the support sort of that they need and guidance that they need to be able to be successful in their career. So from two sides.
Alexander, thank you. Connor, you've got the last 20 seconds. Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Yeah, no, great question. I think, look, we want to be one of the world's largest crypto asset managers. That's definitely like one of our business goals. But I think more like holistically, we really want to work with regulators to allow us to use blockchain technology to its full potential and actually transform financial services, not just from our business point of view, but for investors and people around the world to actually really use this technology for good and for what it was actually intended for.
All right. Thanks, gentlemen. With that, I see that our time is running up. Everybody in the audience, please. Connor Gilmore, the founder of Avantgarde Finance. Alexander Epure, pronounce it for me. I got it. Okay. Thank you. The founder of Curios, and Owner Elgin, the founder of Carbon Cipher. Thank you for sharing your time, and thank you all of us, all of you in the audience.
Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. You can find our content on Anghami, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Follow us on social media at Step Conference and let's stay in touch.